So the biggest thing that happened this week in Dubai was the air show. Big announcements there, all covered on Smashy Business. We also touched on some of the startups in the UAE raising money. Fintech one called Mafoom raised $1.5 million. And a company called Wyze, W-I-Z-E, raised $16 million. And in the F&B sector, Talabat donated $2 million to Gaza. And well done to them. I also attended the Global Media Congress in Abu Dhabi, a very impressive display from all the big media entities and media offices and governments across the UAE. And as well, there was a Virtue Zone. Their annual awards took place last night on the Palm. We were there as Love in Dubai and Augustus Media, and it was good to see all the other startups. We've got a really good interview this week. It was one of those ones that we sought out ourselves and wanted to understand more, because in the F&B sector and the F&B industry, Dubai really is thriving, and this company has really stood out in the last few years. You'll know all many of the names, from Twiggy to La Cantine, a lot of household names in the F&B sector in Dubai. So enjoy the conversation. Welcome back to another episode of Dubai Works Business Podcast. Today we have Rizwan Kasim. He is the CEO and owner of Rikas Hospitality Group. He'll pronounce it better than I will. The mastermind behind Dubai's leading, one of the leading hospitality groups with award-winning restaurants like Mimi Kakushi and Naveen. They're now expanding internationally across Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, Europe, Morocco as well, and the UK. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining the show.
Pleasure.
So Rizwan, it's been a busy week. Tell us what you've been up to.
About the rain of this morning or?
Well, yeah, that's the end of it.
No, it's a busy week.
Every
week.
I'm sure, especially in your line of work. You're at the air show as well this year?
Yes. It was a very exciting pop-up restaurant to be at the air show. This is the first time that a proper restaurant are coming in the air show. So it was very interesting. And as I mentioned before, the industry of aviation is very interesting.
Yeah.
So we're proud first to be the first one and to take the challenge. And it was very interesting to have this kind of visibility and return.
Mm. So I kind of mentioned it, but your group really does have high-end restaurants, well-known brands, very successful ones, and you're in a very competitive industry. Can you just give us an overview of the group?
Okay. So I came in Dubai first in 2013 to open a restaurant. After a few visits in Dubai, I thought the industry of F&B was interesting for the UAE and Dubai. I used to be a partner at La Cantine in Paris. And my first project was to open La Cantine du Faubourg in Dubai. So I spent 2 years to try to find all the location, all the right contact. And we finished to open in April 15 in Emirates Tower. And back in time, it was a difficult industry. It was not easy. The big institution was there, Zuma, La Petite Maison, Roberto's, were open in the AFC. And it was not like today. It was much more difficult to open a restaurant. We were the first one to have a lease F&B space in Emirates Tower. All the other restaurant was part of Jumeirah Group or someone close to
the group. Yeah.
The group. So it took me 6 months to sign the lease, a year to make the construction, to learn about the construction process in Dubai, with the good way and, let's say, the bad surprise. And we opened the 9th of April.
You remember that day?
Very easy. It's the birthday of my daughter.
Oh, very good.
So it was a good day. It was a good day. And we chose this day to be sure that we can have that in our memories. So.
It was a good omen. And, you know, Cantine was, it did hit the ground running. It quickly became a success, right? It was a go-to place. It was busy. How did you think that you made that work?
So Emirates Tower was not an easy space. So a lot of potential partners and contact was quite not really optimistic about the location. When we start to open, I think we feel a gap that was missing in Dubai. We opened with a restaurant lounge with some music where people can have a dinner but also dance and or just have a drink at the bar. And this gap was a mix of art, video, lights, food and music. So the open format music that we had at La Cantine and this new wave of concept was very quite well welcome in the market. Mm. So it was a success. And to go back to Emirates Tower, yes, it was a difficult place, but it was also a chance for us. Emirates Tower is an institution, is the main building of His Highness. Jumeirah was as an hotel there. So it was very interesting to navigate inside this environment.
I'm sure you learned a lot. And was the strategy from the start to build a hospitality group, or was it sort of take one by one?
No, I take it one by one. So I am a man of challenge, and I like to expand, and that is inside my DNA. So you cannot go against that. And it's something that I used to do in Paris in a different business, in retail. So when I arrived in Dubai, the first restaurant was in evidence. It was very difficult for me in terms of financing, opening. I opened with, let's say, my last dirham in my pocket. But with the success and sometimes we had the chance to have other opportunities.
How did you go about the financing? the outlay for some of these, you mentioned construction, some of these fit outs and the designs, and of course, on top of that, you need the lease, the licensing, the business, the marketing, the team in place, the high quality chefs, all the sort of stuff. Like, how do restaurateurs do that? How did you do it?
Look, I will try to split your question in a few things. First, in terms of money financing, I had a few very interesting investors with me. It was not big institution of finance or bank, but private investor that was following us and was happy with the success of La Cantine to open others. So that was very interesting. I still own the majority of my company, but my close partners was very helpful on that. The second point is the expansion itself, the lease and all these kind of things. I think Dubai, it's a land of opportunities. As soon as you show that you are committed, you are serious in your business, you have a success, and you can deliver, all the doors can be open for you. And today, I will make you the story of the group, but we have 15 restaurants. I'm working with all the landlords of Dubai, and everybody's happy to welcome us because we push and we deliver what we are telling them. So that's it's interesting. In terms of operation, I find the right people. I had a chance to find the right people in the operation. I had to find a corporate chef after a year of opening of La Cantine. I didn't understand that the level of the food quality and the expectation in the market was so high. So I opened, like, we used to have a lifestyle place in Paris where the food was good, but maybe can be better there. So I welcome an amazing chef, that it's Gilles Bosquet, that started with me at La Cantine 7 years ago, that now become a partner in the group, and he's managing the 15 restaurants that we have and kitchen. So he's choosing the chef, choosing the menu, and we collaborate a lot on that, because right now Dubai is one of the top scene food industry in the world. I discuss a lot with many people in the market that start to not be impressed when they travel, and that it's a sign that Dubai reach, I think, a level that it will be difficult for other city to touch.
Yeah, definitely. And but just going back, you know, when you own the group, because I often see establishments being set up, and from an investment point of view, do investors invest the outlay for one unit, or do they invest at a group level? And then do you need to find the financing for the initial outlay for each new venue?
So we have a very small financing that it become a little irrelevant compared to the volume that we have. Mm. On side of me, I have 5 shareholders that are between 5% and 25%. But the growth is more organically. We develop the restaurant, we make profit, we reinvest the profit. The partners are helping us to fill the gap when we need it. Mm. But no, we create this group just with the profit that we've done and what we generate in our business.
Free cash flow and then reinvest. And at what point did you know that a canteen was a success and that you thought, okay, now let's do another one?
So the success in general is coming quite quickly in Dubai. There is no middle gap. Or you work or you don't work. And when you work, you can see it very quickly. People are coming. The revenue is great. The target audience and the attraction is impressive. We just opened a new one called Eugène in the campaign scheme of Rabat. We're amazed by the fact and how people are coming and the attraction that we have in the Kempinski. That was not known to attract these F&B people, but I have to admit that MAF company did a lot of work and helped us a lot to achieve that. But the success in Dubai, there is no, or you have it or you don't have it, and that is very difficult in the city.
Yeah.
So La Cantine was a success. We didn't run to have a second restaurant quickly, but the second restaurant, I think we opened 2 years and a half after, and it was Ninive, next to La Cantine. It's an Arabic concept. And we had a success also, but it was for me to create more a destination compared to the other destination that you have in Dubai. So right now we have 4 athletes in Emirates. We have La Cantine Faubourg and Ninive. And after that, we open Gohan and Madan and Marcel. So now we have a destination.
And, you know, you mentioned the latest one in Mall Emirates. And, you know, I was checking it out on Instagram and people were sending it and things like that. And you almost without doing anything intently, your group is getting a following, right? Like people are saying, where are the new concepts? And it's getting that stamp of approval because of your reputation. Do you find that there's customers seeing what you're doing next and then trying out the restaurants that way?
I think it's a general mindset. Of course, we're happy to have these followings for the group, but I think all the groups in Dubai that are in the hospitality have a following. So what's happening when we open a restaurant, people are coming, they give us a chance, they try because of your reputation, but they are very on point with the product. So if they come and they don't have a good experience, they will not come back, even if you are a CAS or another group in Dubai. So we don't lose in perception that even if we are a group, even if we are people coming, we still need to deliver the food, the quality, the kitchen, the design, and the global journey and experience to the guest. So we are not taking anything for granted, you know. Mm. I think, and they're right, if the customer want to go in a better restaurant because they have a different feeling, and because some other people are doing better than us, I can understand that. We don't own any clients. We just need to try to bring the level of what we're doing since 8 years.
Yeah. What do you think that people see across the group that if they go into the restaurant, you know, what are the things that you template, as in you have a format? Because all the concepts seem different. You know, even you mentioned your second restaurant was a completely different cuisine. And I've been to, I think, Lanalusa as well, like that's a Portuguese type fish cuisine. And everyone seems a little different. Is there anything that you can scale across the group?
So that is a big question. The normal way for us as a group in F&B was to open La Cantine and to try to open La Cantine in different city around the world. And it's what 90% of the group are doing, focusing on one brand, trying to make it better and try to expand outside. And a lot of good restaurants did that. I think Reef opened in Egypt and a few other places. Hilbert opened in London. Joe Gazal with the main open also in London. So that is the normal way to expand. In Dubai, for many reasons, I didn't have the chance. I tried, but I didn't have the chance to find the right project or to find moment to do it. And I was still trying to expand. So it's difficult to duplicate a restaurant like La Cantine in Dubai. So naturally, we became an expert to create concept and to have different cuisine. Today, we have a mix of beach club, where we have a Mediterranean beach club with Twiggy, we have a Greek with Kima, and we have Tagomago, that is a Spanish cuisine. We have what I call some restaurants that are more based on the night trade, La Cantine Faubourg, Nini's, Mimi Kakushi, and some new are coming. We just opened yesterday Xu. It's a Chinese restaurant in the Kempinski.
Oh, wow.
We opened Shiwam with an amazing chef called Adrien Villedieu. So that it's a different trade of business. And we have what we call the more restaurant that have a trade during the day, like Jeune-Eugène, Lanalusa. We have Madeleine and Marcel, and we just opened a month ago Madeleine and Marcel on the View, Saint-Régis de Pan. And we opened also last month Blue Box Tiffany.
Yeah.
We manage the Blue Box Cafe for Tiffany. So by default, because I didn't have the chance to expand outside, we become a specialist of creating new concept, new design, new menu, and new project. So I think the weakness that was complicated for us to go outside UAE become a strength by having 15 different restaurants with new concept, with new ideas. So it's difficult. It's a recipe. You need to change always your menu. You need to have different design. You need to have the same details of the others. You need to impress every time. So it's not easy.
You definitely have, you've got something, and I'm trying to figure out what it is, because there's no pun intended, there's a secret recipe, there's a formula there, because it's working, right? And creating one brand is hard enough, creating multiple brands, but to do it with cuisine is even harder, because the F&B industry is notorious at being hard to get footfall and make the margins work and all that. Is it a passion for food? Is your background food? Or
no, it's not food. But because I was partners in La Cantine in Paris, I became interested by the industry. And I was more a silent partner there. The founder of La Cantine are Pierre Pirageau and Elena Parabowski. And I joined them in 2003.
So
20 years already. So I start to have a bribe of what can be the business. And when I decided to move in Dubai and to change and having a different kind of life, I didn't want to go back in retail in Dubai. And one of the industry that was, I think, having a gap in the city was the high-end restaurant. So I penetrate the industry with this opening. And of course, we are passionate of challenge, expansion, food, design, every kind of aspect of what we are doing. So you are talking about a secret recipe. I think it's more how you create a bubble and how you create a team around you that is following, or your wish, or your vision, or your passion around the industry. So I think we have a very strong team. Gilles is an example. We have someone who's managing all the image and all the communication for us at NASD. We have an amazing architect. We have people who are creating branding with us. And Pierre, my partner, is always involved and still involved. And he has a special talent, and he's a genius in his particular design and touch and details. So I'm talking about secret recipe, but I think it's more how you integrate all these people in one direction, one vision, and how you can be focused on the target. It's very difficult to work with in the industry, and on side of it, it's very difficult to work with me because I'm a nice guy, but at the end,
you're demanding.
I'm demanding, and also I'm challenging a lot. We can create a project in 3 weeks. We can be very focused and pushy on few things. So I think all these people also start to love this kind of challenge, and they embrace this vision or this challenge that I put in the company. So at the beginning, it was difficult because people was not feeling comfortable to be so active, proactive, and in an urgent way doing things. I think right now, as soon as we put a project on the table, everybody's excited. So it's going fast, and everybody has the same vision and in line with the group. So that's it's interesting. I think the secret recipe is more than that, just finding the right design and the right chef.
Yeah. But about that, you know, it's interesting listening to you explain that you have, say, in-house heads of each area. So the food area, the architect, the branding. At what point did you decide to do this as part of the group as opposed to having key partners? And is that an investment decision? You know, I like the story about Canteen and the investment to go for one of the best chefs in the market. You know, that's something that you need to decide to allocate extra funds to. And do you do that at each area? Do you say, hey, I need to do that now for interior design and architect?
Not really. I have a very simple way of managing my business. I manage my business like a good father. I spend the money that I can spend. I don't overpromise. I just want to be sure that when I commit on something, we respect what we are saying. And that for me is the base of Ricas in general. I don't want to jump too fast. I don't want to commit on something that I will not able to assume. So the company grew, and the team members are growing at the pace of the restaurant.
Okay.
We don't anticipate the future. We're just planning the future. For us, it's very important.
And, you know, I was struck by the different categories, if you define them, from the daytime cuisine, the nighttime, the beach club. Is there anything that you don't do? Is there any sort of F&B that you say, that's not us, that's not Ricas Group?
In terms of F&B?
Yeah.
I think there's three kinds of market in F&B. What I will call the most accessible market. It's something that we're not doing really.
Lower price point. Fast food.
Yeah, fast food. The casual, that I feel difficult because you need to have a very strong success and you need to have a different kind of following people. And I have a lot of interesting example that are more casual, more cool, nice, easygoing. But behind there is a very strong name, chef, or a very strong concept or specificity in the concept. There is a burger place that just stop and call it 11 Green. It's very interesting, but it's a very specific product. They are very good on that, and they go straight to the point. I really like also, I was mentioning Riff. I think he has casual concept, but he's one of the best in his category. Mm. There's a lot of people like that who are very strong. Orfali is one of the best example. He has this small restaurant. He's very on it with the family. And he's doing, he's one of the best restaurants in the world.
Rose, yeah.
Yeah. So for me, our focus is to be a high end. We're trying, and we have customers that are searching this kind of product. And as a DNA, we are more going on that. Doesn't mean that we don't look at the other kind of opportunities, but I don't think that we are the best on the casual market.
So you know where you're good at, and you also mentioned vision twice before. What is the vision? What's the mission? Do you have a North Star? Do you have something that you're trying to achieve? And then how do you articulate that across all the employees?
So, as I told you, by default, we start to expand in Dubai, and we expand with different cuisine and different projects and opportunities. Today, the vision is quite simple. And because we are based in UAE, we are based in Dubai, we have a strong commitment and a long-term commitment of what we are doing in Dubai. And we just have 14 brands that are homegrown concepts from Dubai. Mm. So Dubai becomes for us a base and a lab. We want to continue to expand brand. We want to create. We don't want to have any limitation in Dubai because we feel comfortable and we are confident that we can continue. And we have many cuisine that we didn't try. So we still have room to of creation. Saying that, knowing that Dubai are one of the best cities for the F&B, where we feel that we have a recognition on the market, I think we deserve, and we can try, I think, to go outside the UAE. So we are targeting and trying to expand the brand, the 15 brand, maybe not, but few of the brand outside the UAE. I think knowing that all the big brands and all the big F&B players are coming in Dubai, and we are still proud and in front of them, we are still making a good job, I think we can do well outside. The only problem of that, it's the access of business, the way of work in Dubai, the way that how it's easy to manage project in Dubai will ask us to be more cautious and more precise when we are going outside Dubai, because we all know that it's much more difficult in Europe right now. To go in US, it's quite far. We have project in US, but it's quite far. It's still 6,000 or 7,000 kilometers from Dubai. So we really want to have the hub for Dubai. So the natural way for us to expand is to check the GCC market. Saudi is one of the target. We are very cautious on Saudi because it's not an easy market, even if there is a scale. Bahrain is an interesting country, and we are going there. We signed a project there. So yes, the natural way for us, because we are very strong in Dubai, is to see the local market and the GCC market. We are not in Abu Dhabi, so I hope we'll open soon in Abu Dhabi and try to do something. But in a more bigger way, Europe and US and even Asia is something that we can look at it.
And do you think it's the brands, the market entry, you might use the existing brands that you have rather than new concepts?
For expansion outside, yes, of course.
And which ones do you think are suited? Is one, do you think, or of a brand that can be at different locations, or is it a case of finding the right taste or cuisine in each market?
So the advantage that we have right now is with the variety of cuisine, the specificity of this place, big place, small place, 100 square meters, 1,000 square meters, the kind of trading hours to be more oriented in business or lifestyle. With all the variety that we have, our main target is to find the right location outside. If we have the right location and the right project, I think we have the right product to go in the location. So yes, we have a priority. Lacantin is a priority. Ninive, it's a strong priority because it's a unique concept in the industry that we have. Mimi Kakushi is the nice product. And we just been ranking 40 best bar in the world a month ago. So I think we have some visibility also in this industry. We have some beach club, and we signed Twig in Bahrain.
Okay.
So that is something quite interesting. The expansion model, I think, is there. We just need to allocate the right people. 8 months ago, we welcomed Christian Granitzer that was working for Hilton in expansion, and he became our VP for expansion. So even the team became bigger and stronger with much more capacity and knowledge of what we used to have a few years ago. So I'm very confident.
Yeah, that's interesting. So it's quite strategic in this level and expansion. But just looking a little bit more in the business side, how your private group, I don't expect you to reveal too much of the details, but how profitable can a high-end restaurant be in Dubai in terms of, I know that historically F&B units would be measured on covers, how many people attend each evening, or at the end of the year, the total volume of revenue, and then the margins.
Okay, I can be precise. So, today in the group, we are making around $50 million revenue, and we are making 22% EBITDA. Wait.
Okay.
The good thing is our profit are fully invested in the expansion, so that it's something interesting, and everybody and all my partners have the same vision and are in line with what we want to achieve. So that is the base. In general, I think the ratio in Dubai is around 25%, between 20 to 25% profit for restaurants that are working well. It's much lower outside. It's between 10 to 15. So it's coming to a point, is there any restaurant in Dubai? It's a strong question. I think our industry need to understand that in the future, and the profit will decrease a little because we will have to share the cake. So that it's an important fact, I think. It's a unique market. You doesn't have this kind of return on investment and profit anywhere in the world.
That's amazing to hear, but it's a testament to Dubai's sort of F&B strategy and the Michelin stars and that side of things. But of that, could you break down that number, that high number, a little bit more? What's more profitable? Do you have one entity that drives a large percentage of that growth?
Not really. It's quite well balanced. So we have a very interesting return on Twiggy and Kima in term of profit. We achieved the numbers. We are higher than what was expected by us and the landlords. Tagamago opened in April, but we completely had to restrain the operation because we are building a pool in the water. So it's quite a unique project and quite unusual project for an F&B operator. So it's quite interesting to reclaim the land of the palm and try to make this pool. Look, it's quite spread well. Mimi Kakushi is doing well, Ninive is doing well, La Cantine is doing well. We are quite well balanced. I still don't have the top eat making $30 to $40 million revenue in one restaurant, but we are quite happy with what we achieve and what we have. The balance is there. We have a strong base, and for me that it's more important to be sure that the base of the company and the stability is strong.
And do you know, given the ownership structure that you alluded to, you don't need to have a P&L for each.
Yeah, we have a P&L for each restaurant. We have a different company for each restaurant. We have a P&L for each restaurant, but all these restaurants are owned by one company. That's called Ricas.
And the commercial leasing part of it, is there any performance-related payments as well if this place is successful?
But you know, every lease today in F&B retails, you have a minimum guarantee and you have a percentage. Whatever is higher, you are paying. So the turnover rent is there, and in a lot of places, we're achieving that.
Mm. So you're paying the higher price.
They're paying a high rent, but I think, it's a fair situation.
Mm.
We are doing good. We are paying a good rent. The landlord is happy. They are calling us to have more projects with us. I think it's a win-win situation. I don't have any frustration of paying more rent.
If you're successful.
Exactly.
Give and take as well, give some back. So I alluded to the awards and the Michelin. Is that something that you guys looked at? I know a lot of your brands came up there in the recent one. And is that something that you looked at, and is that a good way of attracting and retaining talent?
So today we have a quite a good rating and we are well placed in Goemio. We used to be in 50 best. Mimi is not there anymore, but I think it's a very interesting statement of the situation of the market in the Middle East. And you have Michelin star, where Ninive is a Bib Gourmand and Mimi Kakushi has the recommendation of the guide. To go to the guide Michelin and the Michelin star, I think it's a different specific product. It's something where maybe the number of covers, the attention, the way that you work the product has to be different. And I think there is an amazing restaurant who's doing that. Tracine is an example, and Grégoire with Oceano is another example. So the scale that we have in a restaurant and the number of covers and the way that we present a restaurant that are more conceptual restaurant, I think it's much more difficult to go to this star level of Michelin. Can we do it in the future? Maybe. I think we can plan to have something more focus on that and committed to achieve that. I think it's an interesting fact that all this guide and all this ranking are there. Of course, sometimes we don't feel
appreciated
at the right value.
Okay,
but it's still interesting.
Yeah, and. You know, Rizwan, you came here 10 years ago and you had a view that Dubai could be that sort of culinary capital. Did you expect it to go so fast? Did you expect both your business and everything we just talked about, all those brand names? And it really has, you know, it's on the global map now as a city for, as you mentioned. Did you expect it to go so fast?
As a group in openings?
Openings, but also the reputation of Dubai as being a culinary destination.
I think the commitment of Dubai Tourism and the leaders that we have are amazing. And having the chance to be in Emirates Tower, we are welcoming some of them. I think the vision of what the leaders have and how the way that they're managing the day-to-day business and what the vision that they put, and I think there is the vision 2030, there is the area 2071 in Emirates Tower, so we can see that there is a roadmap that is quite clear. Going back to our industry, I was talking with one owner of a restaurant in Miami. We have a very strong difference compared to Miami. Miami is the hub F&B of Americas, South America, and US, US, Canada. Dubai become the hub between Miami, Asia, Europe, the Middle East. I think we are talking of a different level in terms of perception of as a hub in the business in general, but more in our industry. people in Hong Kong are talking of Dubai. People of Miami are talking about Dubai.
Are people of Paris talking of Dubai?
We are here.
But that's the, you mentioned Europe, and that's the level, isn't it? Right, like the history of cuisine in Paris is the highest. Obviously, London's, and there's other places. Yes. But did you expect it to be for people to high quality food and to be on competing with reputation wise with French cuisine so soon?
Yes. No, but look, we can see it in Dubai. When you see the diversity of what you have in Dubai. And the level of what every group are bringing in Dubai, I think it's very interesting. If we talk about the French cuisine, I think it's a specific cuisine that maybe needs to be more little more open. Right now, and this is the feeling that we have, people love the Italian food, the Japanese food, the Greek food. I think this concept embraced something more conceptual, less, I will not say clean, but less quiet. I think Zuma is an amazing example when they opened, I think, more than 12 years ago. So vibrant, good food.
Sorry to interrupt, but do you think then that the discipline and the history of French cuisine is holding Paris back, for example, and the diversity in Dubai is allowing crossover concepts and things like that, and that's a net advantage at the moment?
I think it's much more about talking about cuisine. I think the way that Dubai is pushing the city challenge every industry, and I think it can be the case for the F&B, but it will be the case for many industries. I think being in Dubai, having the opportunities, having some landlords and leaders that pushing you to do something different or better, and be sure that Dubai is at this level, I think that it's a key and it's a difference compared to the other city, compared maybe to Paris or London. And I think the involvement of what the city have in the different industry. I think last week, Issam and DTCM organize a dinner at La Cantine. They invite few chefs. I think there is a lot of emulation with what they are creating, what they are doing, and that it's a real difference because it's push you to be stronger, better, to be sure that we can be proud of what we're doing here. I think the mindset is a little different outside.
Mm, absolutely. Switching tack a little bit before we run out of time, but. Let's talk a little bit about technology, because technology is in every industry, in every sector, in F&B, both in terms of logistics, supply chain, how people order food. How does technology play a role across your group?
I think we need to... We cannot escape from that. And every day, we are trying to make things better. We're trying to ask all different partners to push their technology, their software that can fit what we are doing. We have a reservation system with 7 rooms that they are keep pushing the software and be sure that it's an answer to our demand. We have a supply chain software called SUPI that give us much more knowledge, reactivity, and interaction with our supplier. So that's very important. Of course, the fact of IE, it's very important. It's there. We are searching a lot, learning a lot. We don't want to implement things too fast. I think there is still things to understand. But I don't want to use the technology only for a finance perspective. I think the technology is much more than that. Is how we can give an experience to the guest. We can be sure that we follow up a good review or a bad review. How we can communicate with them to be sure that this community that we create can be aware of what we are doing. And how we can know better the need what they want and how we can serve them. I think if your target is that, automatically you will arrive to something better for everything, in terms of finance or in terms of experience and in terms of interaction with the team. So I just want to be sure that the technology is helping us to achieve something for the guest and not something for only the pocket.
Do you have someone who deals with our tech vendors approaching you, startups in F&B all the time? Do you have someone on procurement deciding, listening to all these demos and pitches?
So we have someone in the procurement. I think the subject is much more bigger than just the procurement. So we all have interest. The chef is checking what we can do, and we are talking about a new technology in the kitchen, for example. The expansion, and Christian is checking what we can do. We're checking which kind of app we can put in place. Everybody's quite involved in this domain to be sure that we can find the best advanced technology in the different sector that can be in communication and marketing, in supply chain, in exploitation and operation. So for us, it's a global commitment.
And, you know, lastly, you know, what's your view on this region as an emerging market? Do you think it's going to emerge? There's been some, you know, there's turmoil across the region in different parts. You know, there's traditionally instability. What's your view in the next 10 years?
So talking about instability right now, I feel lucky. We don't feel anything in Dubai. And I think Dubai is managing well the situation. So right now, purely in terms of impact, we don't have any impact. The second thing is, I think all the countries around the UAE are quite aligned of what they want to do. We travel a lot in Doha, Qatar, Saudi, Bahrain, and all the other countries. I think there is a general wish to be sure that the Middle East become much more attractive, bigger, with much more access to expat, and we can feel it. I think there is quite a great advantage to be here, that everybody knows about safety, security, and all the perspective that you can have. So I think we are going to great next 10 years.
Great. Positive note to finish on.
Yes.
Thank you, Rizwan. Thank you for sharing your story this morning. It's been a pleasure listening to you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It was a pleasure.
Very impressive operations altogether. Well done to everyone involved at Rikas Group. Thank you to Ali Khalil and Hisham, Mohammed Hisham, for putting together the show. This will go out on Love in Dubai as an article. You'll be able to watch it on smashy.tv. It was live. You can get that on all the apps as well. Of course, we're also the streaming partners for basketball, UAE, futsal, and handball in the UAE, and there'll be games on all this weekend there as well if you want to check that out. Do continue to check out Smashy Business on Instagram, social media, and the website and the apps. This was a Smashy Business production as part of the Augustus Media Podcast Network. Speak to you at the same time next week.